Thank you for writing for this tape. I am now in our radio studios overlooking beautiful Lake Palestine near Tyler, Texas, the result of a defective tape of a sermon that I delivered in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania recently. When the tape came down to our offices here, we found that it was not of sufficient broadcast quality. So I have brought all of my documentation, all of my notes, and two of my Bibles, and am seated here now at the studio desk, and will relate to you exactly what I told those people and what I outlined to you in the letter to which you responded. Many of you people are longtime listeners to the World Tomorrow program, and you know that I began on radio way back in about 1955, the very first television program I made, full-time on radio in the later part of 1957 and 58. From that very early date, I had come to understand, through studying my father's booklet, The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, and through proving that to myself, and then studying in Ambassador College with a very sizable theological library, and studying into the Bible, the Word of God, in my many college classrooms, that Germany was very likely the Assyria of ancient Bible history, and that the United States and the British Commonwealth of Nations represented Manasseh and Ephraim. I understood where the lost 10 tribes of Israel were located on a modern map. And from that time, I began preaching, as did my father before me, that Russia was not the beast of biblical prophecy, that always down through history there had been a Germanic kingdom dominating most of the time the so-called Holy Roman Empire. We began with understanding what is the beast of biblical prophecy. We began with understanding the second chapter of the book of Daniel that tells us of the four great world-ruling empires, beginning with ancient Babylon, and then Persia, then Greco-Macedonia, then how, even before Alexander the Great's body was interred, there were four generals squabbling over his empire, which was about to be dismantled, how there was a transitional period during which, eventually, another great power emerged, that was the Roman Empire, and how all of these prophecies of Daniel, Daniel 4, Daniel 7, Daniel 11, that portrayed these successive four world-ruling empires had actually been fulfilled time and again by looking at history. But that the second chapter of Daniel, as well as the seventh chapter of Daniel, the 11th and the 12th chapters of Daniel, fit perfectly into Jesus Christ's Olivet prophecy. Jesus Christ of Nazareth portrayed a time when at his second coming there would be 10 nations fighting against Christ, that those 10 nations would comprise what is called the beast, that Christ would conquer and overcome them, that he would set up the kingdom of God on the rubble which had resulted from the destruction of those 10 nations. You cannot mistake or misunderstand the 17th chapter of the book of Revelation, verses 12 through 14, that said very clearly that the 10 horns that John saw in vision were 10 kings who would come together as if with one mind, one policy, one foreign policy, one military, one economy, and they would fight Jesus Christ at his second coming. Knowing these and many other inputs and prophecies from the Bible, my father before me and I later on came to understand that eventually there would come together in the confines of what had once been the old Holy Roman Empire, a modern, nuclear-armed, space-age, 10-nation conglomerate, that it would emerge as the great world superpower of its time, that it would be put together under the auspices of a great false prophet, a great universal religious leader. From the very early 1950s, actually even before that, my father had begun to say that a United States of Europe was going to emerge in Central Europe. And from the 1950s, all of us who were pioneer students in Ambassador College and later came along to join with my father in the ministry of the Worldwide Church of God, as it began to be called in the 1960s, were preaching continually that the greatest threat to the future security of the United States and Britain would be the emergence of a United States of Europe. But it was more than that, because there was a two-part warning by Jesus Christ delivered in Mark 13, Luke 21, and Matthew 24. Not only did he say, when you see an abomination of desolation standing in the holy place where it ought not, but he also said, when you see armies surrounding Jerusalem in Luke 21. And so when you put both of those together with the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, and you see that here is this king of the north, who we identify as the beast power, who is going to come into the Holy Land swiftly with aircraft and ships in modern parlance, and is going to occupy the Holy Land, and that the land of Egypt will not escape, but that the nations to his east will not be involved in this war, we had come to understand long ago that the communist hordes of the Soviet Union and any of their allies did not comprise the beast of biblical prophecy. And many of you longtime listeners to the World Tomorrow broadcast and listeners to my program and readers of the 20th Century Watch and the International News from 1978 onward at the establishment of the Church of God International know and understand how often I have repeated that even during the very depths of the Cold War, during the Kennedy-Khrushchev missile crisis over Cuba, we were saying continually before large live audiences, Russia is not the beast. Russia is not going to invade Palestine. Russia is not going to eventually be the greatest enemy of the United States. It's possible to have more than one enemy at a time. I want you to think about that for a moment in the contrast with all of the dozens of Protestant evangelicals, some of the largest and most immediately recognizable names in Protestant evangelism. And I could mention them, but I won't put their names on this tape. But many of them have even written bestseller books with words like Armageddon in the title and so on. And as if with one voice, I remind you that all of these would-be prognosticators said that Russia was the beast, that Russia would come down into Palestine at the time of the end, that the great final climactic battle to fight Christ at his coming, to completely destroy the nation of Israel and occupy it, would be perpetrated by the Soviet Union. Now, I've reminded my audiences, dozens and dozens of them, over many, many years now, by starting some of my personal appearance campaigns with the following type of statements. I said, for example, the last chapter of European history has not been written. I have begun many of my personal campaign speeches or sermons with that statement. I've also started many of them like this. The NSC did not know. The FBI did not know. The CIA did not know. The intelligence agency of the Navy or the Marine Corps or the Air Force did not know. The Pentagon, the White House, they did not know. No administration from Eisenhower until today in the Clinton period knew what was going to happen inside Central Europe. But I knew. And I can prove it. So you see, when the Berlin Wall was coming down, two sons of mine and I, very hurriedly getting a passport for the younger of the two of them, David, went over to Berlin and watched that delirious celebration as the wall came tumbling down and German reunification was underway, speedily followed by the overthrow of the mantle or the cloak or the domination of the Soviet Union on the part of all the Eastern European nations, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, Poland. I knew, and I told a live audience in Jekyll Island, Georgia in 1978, when Karol Wojtyla acceded to the so-called Holy See and became the next pope, that a Polish pope would be instrumental in prying loose the iron grip of the Soviet Union from Poland. Because, I remind you, and I can document it and have documented it, that for literally decades I have been saying, listen to this, the Warsaw Pact will disintegrate, Germany will reunite, Germany will loom large once again as the dominant power in Europe. Germany will be at the helm of a united Europe. And I remind our audiences that time and time again I quoted even from the Pope himself, who was talking about a united Europe from the Urals to the Atlantic Wall. And I remind you that the Urals are east of Moscow. The Urals are east of Moscow. So what my father and I were saying, what I've been saying for 40 years of my life, is that the Soviet Union would disintegrate, that Eastern Europe would come out from behind the Iron Curtain, that the heartland of Europe, which includes East Germany, Poland, and some of those other nations, would become a part of a United States of Europe. I've also surmised that the present configuration of the European Economic Community would eventually come apart. I doubted that France would remain a bona fide member, and I have certainly doubted and said so openly, though it has nothing to do with your salvation or mine, it is merely an opinion of mine, that Great Britain would not necessarily be involved, that Great Britain might eventually withdraw from the common market. So here we are, with the Berlin Wall having come down, my two sons and I rush over to Germany, we take our TV cameras, and we interview passersby on the street. I affected or did a couple of television programs, or three, I forget now, on that subject very quickly following my return, and we produced a special year's end edition of 20th Century Watch with an article, New Order Coming Soon in Germany. Now, if you haven't read that particular special issue of 20th Century Watch, it's out of print, but we have reprinted that article, all of it, and here's what it contains. And you can have it if you want to write for it, or better yet, call for it. And you know the number, and you know our address. It is 903-825-2525, or Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525 in Tyler, Texas, 75710. In that article, I went back and I researched through only a portion. I researched many of them, but there simply wasn't enough room, so I only pulled out 54 separate quotations from decades in the past, in which I reminded our readers of our continual repetitive theme that the Pope was probably going to move the Vatican back to Jerusalem, that Europe would unite and eventually comprise the 10-nation conglomerate called the Beast of Revelation 13 and Revelation 17, that beast power would be provoked by some Middle Eastern power identified as the King of the South in the Bible, which used to be the lower or lesser line of pharaohs called the Ptolemies, P-T-O-L-E-M-E-Y-S, of Egypt. We do not know yet the identity of the King of the South, but it says push at him in Daniel 11, which seems to imply either an economic push of some kind, or maybe, again, the cutoff of energy supplies, the cutoff of vitally needed oil. If that happens, then very, very quickly, a move by a united Europe into the Middle East might take place. Now, a new potentiality looms very chillingly and very frighteningly on the horizon. And that is the interception by German authorities of black market plutonium coming out of the former Soviet Union. It is absolutely frightening that there are hundreds and hundreds of places in the Soviet Union that have weapons-grade plutonium stored, that no one seems to know who has control of all of that. In the complete disintegration of the Soviet Union and the fragmentation into all of these little ethnic borders over there, the little ethnic nations that are fighting and squabbling among themselves, no one really knows whose finger is on the nuclear trigger. Several of those former Soviet socialist republics are now separate sovereign nations, and several of them have large numbers of nuclear warheads and plutonium stockpiles and nuclear fast actor or fast breeder reactors, and they can get their hands on that volatile, death-dealing, poisonous substance. Now, on several occasions, German authorities have actually intercepted shipments, and now the Soviets and the Germans have just recently effected a treaty where their two top intelligence chiefs have gotten together and said they're going to cooperate much more fully with all these Geiger counter searches and really try to clamp down their borders and find out where that stuff is coming from. Well, you and I both know to whom these Russian black marketeers were trying to sell that weapons-grade plutonium. Iran, Iraq, Middle Eastern nations. Now do you see how the stage is being set for the massive intervention of a powerful European multilateral force into the Middle East, if a potential for literally the destruction of all of Europe were to emerge? Now, there's another thing at play here that you need to understand, because Christ's Olivet prophecy said there would be a twofold fulfillment of what is called the abomination of desolation. First, It says, when you see the abomination of desolation, stand in the holy place where it ought not. That we have always understood to mean the man of sin revealed in the second chapter of 2 Thessalonians, who sits in the temple of God, saying that he is God. At the same time, his safety and the territorial integrity and the safety of the remnants of the people of Judah, of the modern-day nation called Israel, which is comprised primarily of the people of Judah and of Levi and some other segments of Israel, to secure their future, to protect the remnant of them following the potential of an attack in the Middle East by some Arab bloc of nations or by an Arab leader called the King of the South. There could be an immediate, massive military response by Europe, not by the United States, going into Palestine, occupying the entire area, guaranteeing the peace, and if the Pope himself were there in situ, on the site, sitting there in a temple building or in a church that is controlled by the Vatican, the Pope, as being the so-called Prince of Peace, the Man of Peace, one of the most charismatic, one of the most beloved, one of the most admired, one of the most popular religious figures in all of the history of the world, no nation, no army, no military organization would dare lay a hand on him, because it would mean the end of their nation. The retaliation from Europe, from other nuclear-armed nations against Islamic powers who would dare to attack the Pope himself in Jerusalem would be instantaneous and it would be massive. Now then, we come down to modern times, to where we are right now. I hauled out all 54 of those quotations coming from old Plain Truth magazines back in the middle 1950s, in the 1960s, in the 70s. I gave little snippets of some of my broadcasts and television programs and even quotations from early issues of 20th Century Watch and the International News. And all 54 of those quotes, with the dates and the page number of the magazines in which they were contained, were reprinted in that special article, which you can have a copy of for your perusal, to document what I'm telling you, to document or to absolutely prove what I'm telling you, if you simply ask for that reprint article called New Order Coming in Germany. And also, we printed it up in a booklet form about a United States of Europe coming soon in a small booklet form. Now I have in front of me on the radio studio desk a great big thick sheaf of information from Germany, from Russia, from the Vatican. I have one entitled Iron Cross, Velvet Glove, of how the Bundeswehr is back in business in Germany and how the military faces the challenge of training good soldiers instead of blind followers. There is a picture in that article that is the same kind of a picture that we are using for the cover of the current number of 20th Century Watch. This article talked about a resurgent German military, and it started out, for anyone who fears a resurgent German military, it was a nightmare of a week. First, Germany's High Court cleared the way for the army to again fight outside of Europe. And Bill Clinton, in Berlin, to help celebrate the departure of the last U.S. troops from that once-divided city, pronounced himself fully comfortable with that decision. 2 days later, 200 members of a German panzer division helped celebrate Bastille Day in Paris. That's the Parisian or the French version of the 4th of July. That is their Independence Day. And here were German panzer divisions rolling down the Champs-Élysées in armored personnel carriers bearing the Iron Cross. There were many members of the old French military up in their 70s and 80s, standing there with their medals, standing there with their flags, standing there with their pennants of their divisions and units that had been overrun by the Bundeswehr in 1940. They lowered their flags to the ground. Some of them were crying. There is a great deal more. Article after article has been coming out in the world press, in publications all over the world, like The Economist, in newspapers from Australia to Germany itself. Here's one entitled Deutschland über alles. After all these years talking about how Clinton is carrying a torch for Germany and how he played directly into their hands by inviting the Germans to take a larger role in policing the world simply because the United States cannot afford to do so anymore. And so in many of my speeches and my sermons before our personal appearance campaign audiences, I have asked, would you rather in the Gulf War have seen a German general instead of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Colin Powell, a very light-skinned African-American who stood up there with his pointer and the map of the area talking about the onslaught of American air sorties against the Republican Guard? And he was talking now about the ground forces and the Republican Guard, and he said, first we are going to cut it off, and then we're going to kill it. And that's exactly what the United States coalition forces did, led by America, in the broad majority Americans on the ground, and it was done. I've said to our audiences, would you rather have seen a German in his inimitable German uniform with its military piping and his peaked cap standing there saying, first we shall cut it off and then we shall kill it? Well, that's what you're going to see in the future. Because of weak, tremble-chin, spineless, jellyfish, vacillating American leadership, or the lack of it, because of the short-sightedness of people who are going to put economic and social and domestic programs and considerations above all else, that are absolute babes in the woods about geopolitics and foreign relations, that know almost nothing, zero, zilch, about biblical prophecy and what the future holds for us, who are going hat in hand on bended knee to our former vanquished allies, our former vanquished enemies who have now become our allies, Germany and Japan, and begging the Germans and the Japanese to pull their fair share of the load to begin to help the United States in policing the trouble spots of the world. Will stand by, because you're going to see it happen. It's not going to be healthy. It's not going to be good for us in the long run, because biblical prophecy indicates that unless the United States of America individually and collectively repents on its knees before its God and acknowledges the breaking of God's Ten Commandments, wiping our dirty feet on His Sabbath, turning to Him in heartbroken repentance, we are going to be taken over by foreigners. We are going to go down and out in an economic collapse that will make the Great Depression of the 1930s look like a Sunday school picnic. We are going to become a third world power and look internally about like a Bangladesh or a Cuba or a Haiti. We are going to be gripped by all kinds of drought, of famine, of attacks by rabid animals, our forests on fire, earthquakes destroying our cities, all kinds of nature in upset, and at the same time we're going to be attacked, our possessions overseas, as well as very likely eventually attacked even here domestically by powerful enemies that we don't even seem to recognize. Now, I have been consistently, persistently, continually voicing that witness and that warning to the United States of America for nearly 40 solid years. Now then, very recently, a telefax came to my desk, and at the very same day that telefax came, two articles came to my desk from newspaper clippings, and I found it to be absolutely prophetic. So as a result, I had just finished an article entitled, Just Where Are We Now in Prophecy?, which is the lead article in the current number of 20th Century Watch for September 1st of 1994. You can have that article, and you can have a free subscription to 20th Century Watch if your name is not yet on the subscription list and you're merely getting this tape in response to my letter. Then be sure you get your name on that list. There is no subscription price. It is free of charge. And get that lead article, Just Where Are We Now in Prophecy? It goes through every one of the statements Jesus made in Matthew 24 and shows you exactly where we are right now. What is the timing? What is the scenario? What is the situation? Where do we fit in the biblical prophecies of the Bible prior to the Great Tribulation, the heavenly signs, and the great final last trumpet plagues, and then the second coming of Jesus Christ? I had finished the article. I had turned it in to our managing editor, Mr. Van Stinson. And then came a telefax and these two other articles onto my desk. As a result, here's what I did. I had to rush to my word processor. I wrote an editorial, and I now want to read it to you. Editorial, Stop Presses, News Flash. Recently, in a personal message hand-delivered to the Pope by a close friend of Israel's foreign minister, Shimon Peres, an official policy statement expressing the foreign minister's plans for Jerusalem's Old City was outlined. Following this, a high-level delegation of Vatican officials stated that, quote, the Old City of Jerusalem must be under one power only, end quote. Dr. James Tabor of the Department of Religious Studies, University of North Carolina, forwarded a number of shocking announcements accompanied by corroborating news clips from various sources in the urgent facts received in my office recently. Dr. Tabor wrote, and I quote, I just pulled this off the internet last night. It is quite reliable, directly from Israel. I think we all have been wondering what has been behind all these visits between PLO and Israeli leaders and the Vatican since last fall. This is apparently it. I had heard rumors of this previously from my rabbinic contacts in Jerusalem, but this is the first hard news I have been able to get. He went on, this is hard to believe, but it fits all the facts as they are unfolding. Of course, Ted, he said to me, you and your father were saying this for years, so finally it looks like we will see it happen. This should crush all ideas others have had of late that the beast is some other power or comes from some other direction. Dr. Tabor is right. For nearly 40 long years, I wrote, I have been writing, preaching, and broadcasting over radio and television that one of the major fulfillments of Christ's prophecies would be the setting up of an abomination of desolation in Jerusalem. Christ warned, quote, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, Matthew adds parenthetically, whoso readeth, let him understand, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world of this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. And Moffat adds the word saved alive, because it's not talking of spiritual salvation, but talking about the physical rescue or salvation of the nation of Israel. And for that matter, of all of the 10 tribes of Israel and all the Gentiles and every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth. Unless those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. And as Luke recorded Jesus' prophecy for our times, and he said, and I quote, when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. End of quote, Luke 21, 20 and 22, meaning that all prophecies will come to a grand smash finale, the great final grand smash climax of prophetic events at the end of the age, just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. Daniel's 11th chapter puts it this way, quote, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. Daniel 11:31. And again, quote, he, that is the king of the north, shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And that is found in Daniel 11:45 and Daniel 12 and verse 1, because it continues right on through the chapter break. For literally decades, my father before me and I, now for the last 40 years, have warned that a major step toward the prophesied great tribulation to befall God's people in the United States, the British Commonwealth, and some of the democracies of northwestern Europe would be a twofold step, twofold move, by a great world-renowned religious leader into Jerusalem, a man whose work is clearly defined in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3, and 4, and a move by a united Europe with a powerful Germany in a position of leadership to enforce peace in the Mideast. Now read that abomination described in detail in 2 Thessalonians. Here's what it says. That man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things, Paul asked, 2 Thessalonians 2, 4, and 5. You will also see in the book of Revelation how that great false prophet has the power to call down fire from heaven in the sight of all of those that he is preaching to and causes them to worship the beast and the image of the beast, which is the ecclesiastical system, the ecclesiastical government that was patterned after the old Roman collegia, the old pagan Roman government, and it is instead a church-state organization. It has a capital. It has ambassadages. It has envoys and ambassadors that go out to other nations all over the world. The world sends its ambassadors to the Vatican, and the Vatican is a state. The Vatican territory inside the confines of the city of Rome is a sovereign territory, as much a separate state as is Germany or England or the United States. It therefore is a state as well as a church, so it is a church-state organization. Now, you and I both know that in recent months and years there have been negotiations underway between, of all things, the nation of Israel and the Vatican. Even though many millions of Jews the world over strongly suspect, and there have been some really powerful books written to prove it, that different popes in different ages at different times have been at the core, have really been the instigators of gigantic pogroms against the Jews. There are some volatile books that you can obtain that show the complicity of the Pope during World War II with all of the Nazi movement, how he turned the other way. He didn't say a thing contrary to Mussolini when Mussolini was ravaging nation after nation. And the Pope turned a deaf ear and a blind eye to all of the shipments of hapless hundreds of thousands, eventually up to 6 million Jews, to the death camps. And there are some volatile books written on it. In the meantime, as hard to understand as it may be, the modern nation of Israel has found it expedient, because of the terrible volatility and the hotbed of problems revolving around the holy places in Jerusalem, because of the ongoing potential of a new round of war. And so Yitzhak Rabin, whom I count as a personal friend, with whom I have shared the podium, I've eaten lunch with the man, he's sat in my office, I've sat in his. He has been in my office when I was over in Pasadena, California. I was there with him to conduct a forum for the student body. I've interviewed him on several occasions. Yitzhak Rabin wants to grant the Palestinians autonomy. He is the one who was outlining his program for the granting of PLO autonomy in the area of Jericho, a part of the West Bank around Ramallah, and then, of course, the Gaza Strip. Now, that's ongoing. That's a part of your news. He has brought that to pass. And the reason he's bringing it to pass, he's trying to defuse the ongoing strife, the riots, the demonstrations, all of the terrible terrorist acts by these extremists on one side or the other. Now, they think pragmatically that if they can get some other entity in there to be in control of the holy places of the old city of Jerusalem, maybe they can defuse the hatred and the volatility of the Arabs who have so deeply resented Israeli control over the holy places since the time of the Six-Day War in 1967. So that is what is behind Yitzhak Rabin's move toward recognizing the terrorist organization, the PLO, which was responsible for the death of who knows how many hundreds or thousands of Jews over a period of many, many decades. Now Yasser Arafat is a head of state, for pity's sake. And you would never have thought that would come to pass. So even though it seems extremely strange and unlikely in the backdrop of recent human history for Israel to begin to negotiate with the Vatican and at the same time to turn around and negotiate with former terrorists and call them heads of state, you've seen it happen. It has occurred. And it is exactly the kind of scenario that I expected would eventually occur, because the Israeli leadership is, again, as short-sighted as is the American leadership. They don't know what the eventual outcome of all of this is going to be. Now, let me give you a few excerpts written by myself or by my father, on an occasion or two by other senior editors of The Plain Truth and 20th Century Watch magazine years ago. Listen to this. The Plain Truth Magazine, October 1951. Quote, God reveals exactly how Catholic political power will seek to achieve world-conquering military power adequate to rescue Eastern European Catholicism. The capital of this revived Roman Empire, along with the Vatican, will make a lightning move to Palestine, probably Jerusalem. This shall be the last abomination to be set up there. End of quote. The Plain Truth, October 1951. over 40 years ago. Quote, "The plain truth, July 1952. At present, the Pope does not have the power to work literal miracles, but the time will come when such wonders will be performed. The Vatican then moved to Palestine. Daniel 11:45 will claim to be the kingdom of God that will bring peace to the world." End of quote. The plain truth, August 1952. Quote, "Germany can't dominate the world until she has the support of continental Europe and the friendship of nations abroad. How can she regain their confidence? By means of the Catholic Church." End of quote. Clear back in 1952. The plain truth, October 1956. Daniel 11, verse 45, quote, "The coming Roman Empire shall establish its palace as capital of the revived Roman Empire and its religious headquarters at Jerusalem." End of quote. Another quote. This from, let me see where it continues here. All right, this from another of the old Plain Truth magazines. "The place of this great abomination couldn't be clearer. It must take place in the city of Jerusalem, inside a temple which apparently must yet be built in a room called the Holy Place. But not just an idol is to be an abomination in the very Holy Place, but a living human being, one who will rise to great office and power and will make great changes on the world scene, one who will speak great words." And that was from The Plain Truth, July 1963. Another quote, The Plain Truth, June 1967. "For 33 years, my father wrote, I've been telling the radio audience and readers of The Plain Truth that the final world disturbances and military battles of this age will center on the Middle East and on Jerusalem in particular. There will soon be a temple in Jerusalem, with daily sacrifices once again being offered. But this man of sin, this son of perdition, this supreme false prophet calling himself Most Holy Father, professing to actually be God, would certainly be an abomination in that holy place." February 1974. Quote, "According to Israel's Etzer Weizmann," his quote now, "I wish the Vatican could play a role in persuading the Arabs to approach our way of thinking. But I'm afraid that the Vatican will most likely stick to the Christian problem, and we will most likely have a confrontation over Jerusalem. I keep looking for some as yet unforeseen event that will change the present progress of relations among the big powers, a change that is absolutely necessary if we are not to face catastrophe." That was a Jewish leader longingly saying he hoped for something like we're seeing happen right now, papal intervention. The Plain Truth, May 1974, quote, "Jerusalem, the plan proposed, would remain part of Israel, but Christian and Muslim holy places would be administered and protected by the Vatican and the Kingdom of Jordan. By inviting a Vatican administration of Christian holy places, Israel could be putting her best diplomatic foot forward in a bid to neutralize the European tilt toward the Arabs." End of quote. Remember, that was in May 1974, The Plain Truth. Here from 20th Century Watch, our magazine published by the Church of God International, June 1980. 14 long years ago, quote, "The most likely fulfillment of the religious phase of this two-part prophecy will be the establishment of a great religious capital in Jerusalem with a great religious leader claiming the very powers of God himself, sitting on a throne on the site of the temple and issuing decrees. With a military occupation of the Holy Land, Jerusalem will be surrounded with armies. And with a great false religious leader sitting in pomp and splendor in this new palace or temple building in Jerusalem, the abomination of desolation will have been set up." That was 20th Century Watch, May of 1980. 20th Century Watch, 1989. Quote, "The Pope has repeatedly called for a corpus separatum for Jerusalem, declaring the city a separate entity, not a part of the sovereign territory of any specific state, but open to all the major religions. Yes, what if the Pope moves to Jerusalem? He could dare the warring powers to move against him. No major Western power would dare resist him. If a temple has already been built by the Jews prior to these events, he would move into it, thus fulfilling a major part of Christ's prophecy." End of quote. 20th Century Watch, 1989. Now then, to that electrifying facts that I received very recently, and to a couple of news clippings that providentially came on the very same day. The urgent facts I received said, and I am now quoting, a close friend of Israel's Foreign Minister Shimon Peres, French intellectual Mark Halter, revealed in late May 1994 that he personally delivered a letter from Peres to the Pope that outlined the Foreign Minister's plans for Jerusalem. According to Halter, Peres offered to hand over sovereignty of Jerusalem's old city to the Vatican. Continuing the quote, according to the details of the plan, the city will stay the capital of Israel, but will be administered by the Vatican. The city will have an Israeli mayor and a Palestinian mayor, both under orders from the Pope. The plan was first published in the Italian newspaper La Stampa on September 10, 1993, 3 days before Rabin met Arafat in Washington. Further details of the plan call, listen to this, for Jerusalem to become the second Vatican of the world, with all three major religions represented within but under the authority of the Vatican. A Palestinian state will emerge in confederation with Jordan, with its administrative capital being Jerusalem, and its administrative capital, or religious capital rather, being Jerusalem, and its administrative capital situated elsewhere, probably Nablus. Now, for decades, I have been warning that a new round of war in the Middle East in which enemies might use missiles like the Scuds hurled against Israel by Saddam Hussein during a Gulf War, but this time tipped with chemical, biological, or possibly even nuclear warheads, if it were to fall upon Tel Aviv and Israeli cities, would bring immediate and massive reaction by the King of the North, whom I've identified as a future united Europe led by a powerful, remilitarized Germany. I then editorialized, if you have not yet received your free copy of our booklet, The United States of Europe, How Soon? Request it by checking the coupon in the inside back cover, which you will get in that issue of 20th Century Watch. The ostensible reason for this move by powerful European armed forces into Israel would be for the salvation of the Jews, to prevent them from being virtually exterminated. The Pope would lend his good offices in this dramatic, electrifying gesture of goodwill to bring lasting peace, he would claim, to the region. And the stage is being set for precisely these events. Now consider. The Islamic Arab nations of Syria, Libya, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Iran, all extremely well armed with the most modern military equipment, much of it supplied by the United States of America, in some cases by the Soviet Union, from fighter bombers to missiles and tanks, and supplemented by bargain-priced Russian nuclear weapons, these nations could control the flow of oil and therefore the economy of all of Europe and Japan. Luke said, and I quote, when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know the destruction or the desolation thereof is nigh. To offset the Islamic Arab military presence, now we can foresee a united Catholic Europe led by Germany in charge of what was once NATO, following the Pope to protect Jerusalem and to secure Mideast oil supplies. Those who have listened to me for years and those who have attended my many dozens and dozens of personal appearance campaigns in the last 16 years have known that I have long predicted a change in the German and Japanese constitutions. And of all things, if I am not shocked, although I don't know why I would be shocked, it was just that it came at the same time. The High Court in Germany has reinterpreted its constitution. It didn't even have to effect a change. It merely put a new spin on it. And so, it is now possible for German armed forces, German panzer divisions, German aircraft, the Tornado, German tanks, the Super Tiger tank that they now have, German super-sophisticated ground-to-air, air-to-air, surface-to-surface, missiles to be used in police actions anywhere in the world, and the most likely place, I tell you, for that to occur is in the Middle East. It is logical for Germany to begin to police the world in place of the United States of America. It is logical, and people are going to see it as such, for Germany to begin to protect Israel. Who could win the most by swaying world public opinion than a modern-day Germany responsible for the pogroms against the Jews during World War II to now appear as the protector and the savior of Israel. It is logical that Japan will put to sea a nuclear-powered, nuclear-armed navy to protect its vast and vulnerable pipelines of Middle Eastern oil, to sustain its economy, and by extension, the economy of the entire world. So the stage is now being set. The United States is withdrawing from Europe. The last American soldier is out of Berlin. Germany is ready to lead the armies of a united Europe to protect their vital interests. The Pope will soon visit Jerusalem. But this time, the Pope will not come as a stranger or a visitor from the outside. He will not now come as a foreigner from abroad. He will now come to Jerusalem as one who is coming to his own home soil, to his own Vatican embassy. He will remain overnight and be entertained and wined and dined in a residence that belongs to the Vatican. I'm wondering if, as a result of his fall and the breaking of his leg and his gradual but slow recovery, he might even time the visit for Christmas time. He might even decide to give his great annual peace pronouncement, his famous speech in 40 or more languages, calling for world peace, from the second or the new Vatican in Jerusalem itself. What else might he say? Surrounded by united European military might, the Pope might proclaim peace in the City of Peace and even be called by the world news media the Prince of Peace. As God's watchman, I have been warning the world, I have been warning you, I have been warning millions of people, I have been saying for 40 solid years these events would take place. I can quote to you quotations that sound like they came from today's headlines, from today's front pages, and there they are in the yellowed old pages of The Plain Truth, The Good News, Tomorrow's World, 20th Century Watch, my broadcast, my telecast from 30, 40, 20, and so on, years ago. Over and over and over again, I have warned, I have witnessed, I have told people it's going to happen. These events are no longer far off in some distant future. What I'm telling you has nothing to do with time cycles. It has nothing to do with chronology. It has nothing to do with weird suppositions or second guesses or ideas that I got out of a secret ring in a cereal box. It has to do with what God's Word says, what it has said from way before I was born, and the fact that a united 10-nation military power will be occupying Jerusalem just before the second coming of Jesus Christ, at the same time that a great false religious leader will be there claiming to have the very powers of God. No wonder Jesus Christ of Nazareth warned us, "Watch you therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes." Jesus Christ of Nazareth said, "Watch you therefore, and pray always that you might be worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man." I have seen prophecy beginning to occur right in front of my eyes. Those two articles I got, how Clinton pressed Kohl to expand Germany's role, hit my desk on the same day as that electrifying facts that I got, inside information from a private computer source linked directly to a news item in Israel itself, and you have not seen that news on any page, not even page 19 of any newspaper in the United States, to my knowledge. It has been absolutely absent from the leftist liberal press of the United States of America. They have paid no attention to it whatsoever. But you're going to read it in this issue of 20th Century Watch. So be sure, as I say now in closing, that if you do not yet have your name on the mailing list to receive 20th Century Watch every single month, it's going to be coming out right on time every single month, We've been able to get it started up once again, and we are so thankful to those who are supporting us on a regular basis who have helped to make it possible, because for the better part of 2.5 years, we simply could not afford to put out that magazine. We were putting out instead a tabloid newspaper in newsprint, which we're going to continue, but which is going to contain mostly church news, where 20th Century Watch will be going to the general public, the television audiences, and it will contain articles on prophecy, as well as doctrinal articles, Christian living articles, many other articles and features, and a lot of letters from our readers and so on. So now we're going to have two publications, 20th Century Watch coming out once a month, and the International News coming out at least 4 times a year, maybe more often, chock full with church news. Now finally, before I conclude, I hope every one of you is making every possible effort you can get to the Feast of Tabernacles this year. It is going to prove to be one of the most enormously important festivals we have ever observed, and I can guarantee you some of the most powerful, some of the most exciting, some of the most fulfilling and rewarding sermons you have ever heard. Not only that, but a chance for recreation, relaxation, for visiting with old friends and meeting hundreds of new ones. There are dozens, dozens, and dozens of people from the parent organization coming to us in church areas, in local churches all over the United States. There are going to be many, many hundreds who will be at our various festival sites in the United States, Canada, and around the world, who will be there for the first time when last year they were meeting with a parent organization in one of their feast sites. I want you to be there to shake their hand warmly, to welcome them, to make them feel like they are really a part of what is going on. We know that the parent organization has backed completely away from even the understanding and the preaching and proclaiming of the identity of the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. They have backed away from a prophetic message. They are backing away from even being on television and going on locally, only trying to promote the church, but they are not anymore fulfilling the commission that Jesus Christ gave to His church, where He said, "Go ye and preach the gospel to the world as a witness," and it's a witness against them. It is not a wheedling, begging, cajoling, or whining message of, "Oh, won't you come?" It is a powerful message of coming world-ruling government. Not only that, but they're backing into the mainstream with doctrines such as the denial of the stripes of Jesus Christ for the efficacy of our physical healing. They say they have already been born again, which is nonsense, according to John the 3rd chapter, and they are adopting the triune or the Trinity theory of the Godhead. I say that a mantle has been picked up by the Church of God International, that a light has gone out in Pasadena, California, but it is burning brightly in Tyler, Texas. And the work of God, of witness, of warning, of being consistent, of being faithful to the theme, of being faithful to God's Word, of never varying, of going year in and year out with the gospel of Jesus Christ and the witness and warning of crying aloud, "Spare not, show my people their sins," is going out from Tyler, Texas. You have heard. You've heard the proof. You've heard the documentation. You know you can prove it. You know what you just heard is true. What are you going to do about it? This is Garner Ted Armstrong